It's a blessing to be with you this morning. You don't look too bleary-eyed, in spite of the madness that went on with the clocks last night. I'm not sure whose idea that was, but we need a referendum on that. We have, in a couple of previous lessons, been thinking about wisdom. And a couple of months ago, we talked about the idea that the foundation of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. And in last month, we looked at the idea that runs through the first 9 chapters of Proverbs, that the most important thing you can get is wisdom, that we need to search it out, seek it out, look for it, make that a habit of life. And I want to pull yet another theme from the first 9 chapters of Proverbs. And you really can't read this section of Scripture without being confronted with this issue in a powerful way, and that is the issue of human intimacy, or the folly of immorality. It's a huge theme in these first 9 chapters. 4 of the 9 chapters have extended sections on sexual morality or immorality. Something like, it kind of depends on how you count, but somewhere between 25 and 28% of the verses in this section of Scripture have to do with this issue. So 1 out of 4, or maybe almost 1 out of 3 verses are dealing with this issue. And of course, this section of Scripture is written to young men, so perhaps it shouldn't surprise us completely. But it has application beyond the audience of young men. This is not, let me say that again, this is not only a lesson for young men, unless by young we mean breathing. Okay? Which is a definition I actually am warming up to more and more every day. But it's not just for men either. It was originally given from a father to a son, and we'll touch on some of those things as we go through. But that does not exclude the many lessons it has to teach to everyone. And it's important not just because it's addressed to young men, but because these things strike at the very heart of who we are, at our identity. In Genesis chapter 1 and verse 27, it says, God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. I know that's not popular to say today. That would be a much longer verse were it written by a modern person. There would be 6 or 8 or 12 or 15 designations of gender there. But the fact is, God made us male and female, and that is part of our identity. And so these things strike at the root of our identity. And many of the restraints for sexual morality are gone in our culture. They don't exist anymore. They have been eroded. Large families often don't live together, and so the influence that was once brought to bear for marriages to stay together because the rest of the family didn't want to be embarrassed by the fallout of it coming apart, that's gone. And even the religious community's influence has been greatly reduced because people simply leave and find a community that will accept whatever they happen to want to do. And so I want us to look at what Solomon had to say to his son about morality. We're going to start in Proverbs chapter 2, and we are going to be spending the bulk of our time in Proverbs itself. We're not going to be looking at a lot of other passages, because Proverbs has so much to say about this particular issue. In Proverbs chapter 2, the proverb writer is Solomon is trying to impart wisdom to his son, and he says the reason that he's doing this, picking up in verse 16, is to deliver you from the strange woman, from the adulteress who flatters with her words and leaves the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. For her house sinks down to death and her tracks lead to death. None who go to her return again, nor do they reach the paths of life. So you will walk in the way of good men and keep to the paths of the righteous, for the upright will live in the land and the blameless will remain in it. But the wicked will be cut off from the land and the treacherous will be uprooted from it. And we're not going to be able to deal with these several passages in great depth, but I want to pull some major themes out of each of them. He starts out in 2:16 talking about the adulteress who flatters with her words. She appeals to the pride of man. And sometimes it's he who is appealing to the pride of woman. It goes both ways. And we all want to be loved and appreciated. And so there are those out there who will play to those weaknesses and try and draw you in to an illicit relationship. But I want you to think about what the proverb writer has to say about somebody like this, someone who would do this. It says, she leaves the companion of her youth. Now, this kind of woman, or this kind of man, as the case may be, once belonged to somebody else. They once loved somebody else. They once committed to somebody else. And they left that person, and they broke that commitment. They shattered those ties. Now, I know there's always a reason, right? There's a reason that happened. It won't happen this time. There's a reason that it happened that time, but it won't happen this time. Let me tell you something. The proverb writer is trying to impress upon us the reality that if she found a reason to lie to him, she'll find a reason to lie to you. If she found a reason to leave him, she'll find a reason to leave you. She used to look at him with stars in her eyes. Now she's looking at you with stars in her eyes. What will you do when she's looking at the next fellow with stars in her eyes? Or reverse the genders if that so applies. She forgets Proverbs 2:17b. She forgets the covenant of her God. Now, there's no reason, no legitimate reason to disregard the faithful and loving God, but that is exactly what has happened. What the proverb writer is saying is someone like this is simply faithless. They're not to be trusted. They have no regard for what is right. And the proverb writer is telling you something. I mean, it shouldn't really take a rocket scientist to figure this out. But what the proverb writer is saying is, you can't trust someone who's unfaithful. Or, to put it another way, sometimes liars lie. Well, who would have guessed? And so, the character of someone who would engage in immorality ought to be warning enough. But he's not done. He says, I want you to think about the end of this. He continues in Proverbs 2:18, for her house sinks down to death, and her tracks lead to the dead. And so what he says is to his son, he says, look, son, if you get involved with somebody like this, this is going to destroy your life. This is going to destroy your life. This is true physically, this is true spiritually, this is true financially, and it's true in a whole bunch of ways that you can't even conceive of or imagine right now. None, Proverbs 2:19, none who go to her return again, nor do they reach the paths of life. Now, just sort of a simple, basic unpacking of these two verses. He says four times, this is not going to end well unless by end well you mean you died. This is not going to end well. He says, those who go to her, none who go to her return again. He's saying, look, you're not going to bounce back from this. Now, I know somebody means, well, I know somebody who got into that kind of situation and he repented and he was forgiven. And of course, that's true. You can turn away from bad choices. And you can be forgiven. But if you think you escaped something like this unscathed, you are sadly, sadly mistaken. Your life will never be the same again. And no, I am not overplaying my hand, nor is the proverb writer. This will change you. You will never be the same. But the proverb writer tells us there's an alternative, and there's a good alternative. If you would turn over to Proverbs chapter 5, now before he presents us with the good side, he again impresses us with the consequences of bad choices. He sort of gives us a picture of two men. One is led astray into immorality. The other rejoices and enjoys the benefits of a healthy, loving marriage. Picking up in Proverbs chapter 5, my son, give attention to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding, that you may observe discretion and your lips may reserve knowledge. For the lips of an adulteress drip honey, and smoother than oil is her speech. But in the end she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold of Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways are unstable. She does not know it. Now then, my sons, listen to me and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her. And do not go near the door of her house, or you will give your vigor to others and your years to the cruel one. And strangers will be filled with your strength, and your hard-earned goods will go to the house of an alien. And you groan at your final end when your flesh and your body are consumed. And you say, how I have hated instruction, and my heart spurned reproof. I have not listened to the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to my instructors. I was almost in utter ruin in the midst of the assembly and the congregation. That's the first man. He has given his life over to immorality. And there are a number of pictures painted here. Again, I'm not going to go into great depth, but I want to pull a couple of things out of this. He talks about the immoral man giving his vigor to others and his years to the cruel one in verse 9. Commentators have wrestled with who the others are, and here who the cruel ones are, who the strangers are in Proverbs 5 and verse 10. But the fact is, it doesn't matter. Okay, it doesn't matter who they are. It will not matter to you either if you get to the end of your life having spent it in a series of pursuits after momentary pleasure, and find yourself old and broken and alone, without any fulfilling relationships, without any family to share your joys and your sorrows, your triumphs and your pains. It won't matter where your vigor and your strength has gone. It will only matter that it has gone. And your life has been spent, and there is no way to get it back. There are no refunds. There are no do-overs. And I didn't know isn't going to get it. You are just left with the empty husk of a broken life and no way to fix it. Now, again, I understand you can be forgiven. You can be forgiven. And I'm not trying to minimize that. But the proverb writer is looking at the very real and inevitable consequences of immorality. And what he says to us is, it doesn't have to be this way. It can be so much better and so much richer. And so he continues in verse 15. He says, drink water from your own cistern and fresh water from your own well. Should your springs be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be yours alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love. For why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all his paths. His own iniquities will capture the wicked, and he will be held with the cords of his sin. He will die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly, he will go astray. And so, he says, look, God has provided an alternative. A good wife, the value of a good wife is above rubies, the proverb writer will go on to say. And he says, drink water from your own cistern. The images that he uses here are interesting to me. He says, if there's a thirst, it can be amply quenched. If there's a hunger, it can be amply satisfied. And he uses language here when he talks about the relationship between a husband and a wife. He talks about it being a blessing. And he talks about being satisfied. And the word satisfied means, sometimes it means sated or full. Sometimes it means drunk, which is kind of interesting because he says, why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress? He says, be exhilarated always with her love. This word exhilarated, in this context, it does mean drunk. It means be intoxicated with the wife of your youth. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're still in their youth. I remember years and years ago, hearing somebody say to his wife, you know, when we first got married, I thought I loved you. But I didn't have any idea. And I love you so much more now. And that is the fruit of this kind of relationship. That the love of a godly man and a godly woman grows stronger and richer over the years. And there is an intimacy that transcends the physical that exists in that relationship. And again, that just gets richer and richer and richer. The more things you overcome together, the more challenges you meet together, the more blessings you share together, the more triumphs, the more hardships, the closer you grow. And no one from the outside can bring to the table what she has for you or what he has for you. Someone said recently that in marriage, uniquely in marriage, we are individuated. And what they meant by that is we gain a certain identity that is unique. When Kim and I got married, I became the husband of Kim. And I'm the only one. Trust me, she can't even hide the cookies from me. I know she's not hiding another husband. I'm the only one. And as a result of becoming her husband, I became the father of Christine, and the father of Jacob, and the father of Melanie, and I'm the only one. And we have shared things together, Kim and Kim and I with our children, that nobody else has shared and nobody else has. And each one of those things becomes a deposit in an account that just gets richer and richer and richer. And no one else in the entire world means to me what she means to me. No one. And you can't buy that. You can't find it on the wrong side of town. And you can't see it on a computer screen. It is priceless. And the proverb writer is saying to us in no uncertain terms, if you can't see the value of that, you're a fool. Nothing in human experience, in terms of human relationships, can surpass that. And so there's an alternative. You can be blessed. You can be satisfied. You can be exhilarated. You can be drunk with love. So you probably didn't think you'd hear me say that today. Let's all get drunk, but this is a good kind of intoxication. And so in view of this, why in the world would you seek anything else? In Proverbs chapter 6, beginning in verse 20, he says, "My son, observe the commandment of your father and do not forsake the teaching of your mother. Bind them continually on your heart and tie them around your neck." Now, I want you to notice something here. We've seen this over and over again. In Proverbs chapter 2, in verses 9 through 11, as he's warming to his subject there, he says, "Then you will discern righteousness and justice and equity in every good course, for wisdom will enter your heart and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul." And he goes on to talk about morality. In 5, 1 and 2, he says, "My son, give attention to my wisdom, incline your ear to my understanding, that you may observe discretion and that your lips may reserve knowledge." We see the same thing here in 6:20 through 23, and then in 7, 1 through 4, "My son, keep my words and treasure my commandments within you. Keep my commandments and live, and my teaching is the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers, write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your intimate friend." The proof against immorality is wisdom. And what we need to appreciate is nobody's born with wisdom. And it doesn't get beamed into you. And there's not a reality series that's going to take care of that. And so one of the things that's being modeled in this section of Scripture, and one of the things that we've got to recognize, is if young men and young women are going to engage these challenges with wisdom, then somebody's got to give it to them. And that's our job as parents. If we send our children out into the world unprepared to deal with these issues because we were too embarrassed to say sex in front of our children, then shame on us. Shame on us. We can't let a little embarrassment or a little awkwardness keep us from instilling in our children in age-appropriate ways, as they grow and mature, wisdom about how to interact with those of the opposite sex in ways that are godly and pure and right. If we don't do that, we are setting them up to fail, because they're going to learn their lesson somewhere, and someone will teach them something. And I can almost guarantee that if you don't teach your children godly wisdom, what they learn will be perverse and destructive. And so, not only do we need to learn what Solomon is trying to teach, but we need to recognize that the very process of him teaching is a model. I'm sure I've told this story before, but a good friend of mine took a young man that he worshiped with deer hunting. And my buddy is a big, huge bow hunter. I mean, he owns a archery shop, so okay, he's a little serious about this. And so he took the kid out, he put him in a stand, and he kills a big buck just right off the bat. I don't think they were out there just a few hours. And so they field dressed the buck, they threw it in the back of the truck. Kid hops in the truck with him. Scott looks over at him and he says, "Let me tell you something." He says, "A white-tailed deer is one of the smartest animals in the woods, except for one time a year when they start thinking with their hormones. And that deer is lying back there because he was thinking with his hormones." And the kid just turns beet red. He's as embarrassed as he can be. And Scott looked at me and I said, "Don't be stupid. Do not be stupid. Because you can end up just the same way." And that, my friends, is wisdom. And Scott cared enough about that young man to be honest with him. That's wisdom. And the proverb writer is telling us not to be stupid. And if you knew Scott, you would know that he is not impaired when it comes to saying what he thinks. He's not shy about that sort of thing. Pretty straightforward. But I promise you, his kids haven't gone out into the world uninformed about the realities. And ours mustn't either. I want to notice just a few things again in this passage in Proverbs 6, 27 and 28. He says, "Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Or can a man walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? So is the one who goes into his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her will not go unpunished. Men do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy himself when he is hungry. But when he is found, he must repay sevenfold. He must give all the substance of his house. The one who commits adultery with a woman is lacking sense. He who would destroy himself does it. Wounds and disgrace he will find, and his reproach will not be blotted out. For jealousy enrages a man, and he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will not accept any ransom, nor will he be satisfied though you give many gifts." And so everybody sort of goes into these situations thinking, "Well, I know this has ended bad for other people, but that's not going to happen to me." And the proverb writer says, look, if you're saying that, you're already doomed. Go ahead, go out, jump in a bonfire, roll around in it, and tell me if it burns. You're going to get burned. You are going to get burned. And it's not going to stay a secret. People always say, "Well, we're going to keep it on the down low." Listen, it's not going to stay a secret. You will be found out. And when you are found out, you will be hated and scorned for what you've done. You're not going to escape. And it's not going to stay a secret. And then finally, in Proverbs 7, we're just going to touch this. I want to make one final contrast. Solomon is looking out the window of his house, And he sees a young man. And the young man encounters a woman. She comes to meet him in verse 10, dressed as a harlot and cunning of heart. She's boisterous and rebellious. Her feet do not remain at home. She's now in the streets, now in the squares. And she seizes him and kisses him. And notice what she says in verse 15. She says, I've come out to meet you. Well, she'd come out to meet somebody, but she wasn't looking for him. Listen to me. If somebody comes to you, and tells you you are just the most wonderful person on the planet, and they just met you, trust me, you're not that wonderful. I'm sorry. Sorry, I don't mean to step on anybody's self-esteem here. But you're not that wonderful. Okay? They want something. Now, some of us are blessed with a built-in lie detector. Because if some woman comes to me and tells me how good looking I am, I know she's lying. Now, if my wife says it, I know she's talking about what's on the inside. But, you know, okay, that. I still think she's just being nice, but, you know. Somebody wants something. This woman didn't come out looking for this young man. She's hunting. Now, in contrast to that, in the Song of Solomon, the groom describes his bride in Song 4:12, a garden locked is my sister, my bride, a rock garden locked, a spring sealed up. And then he goes on to describe all the wonderful things that are in the garden, but it's a locked garden. You understand? You got two images here. One is a locked garden. The other is a revolving door. Again, the audience is young men, so it talks about women, but it applies to men too. Look for a locked garden. Ladies, look for a young man of purity. Young men, look for a young woman of purity. Look for someone who is true. Not somebody who's just out hunting. Because this woman in Proverbs 7 is not real. She's not real. Everything about her is a lie. And let me make one final observation. Sometimes this woman in Proverbs 7, sometimes she's in the town square. And sometimes she's on a computer or a cell phone or some other kind of media. And it really doesn't matter where you meet her. She will destroy you. And lest there be any confusion about what I'm talking about pornography. I don't want to be misunderstood here. And I don't want to beat around the bush. If that's where you're finding this woman, run the other direction now. That will destroy you too. It will destroy your relationships. It will destroy your character. Get out and get out fast. And that is exactly what this young man should have done. He should have run the other direction and he didn't do it. Now there is forgiveness. God is gracious and there is forgiveness. But I want to tell you, these kinds of consequences, the consequences for this kind of behavior, they accumulate. And the damage accumulates. And yes, you can be forgiven. But the consequences don't go away. Now, all sin has consequences. But the consequences attached to these kinds of sins can be particularly bad. And so I want to plead with you. If you're struggling with something that we've addressed this morning, run. Run away from whatever is tempting you and run toward God. And run fast. And get help. And whether you do that in a public forum or not, get help. Because it's not going to get better on its own. And the more you try and hide it, the worse it's going to get. So I know this is not my fun sermon. I don't really like talking about this. But you can't miss it. When you read the wisdom literature, you can't miss it. You get beat over the head with it. And there's a reason. And so, I submit these things to you for your consideration. If this is not your struggle, it is the struggle of someone you know. And if you think, okay, don't be naive. Don't be naive. Somebody you know is struggling with something along these lines. Be a part of the solution. Because we have lost too many people. And I never go very long without hearing about somebody else who's been destroyed by this. Just last year, a brother I had so much respect for hadn't spent a lot of time with him, hadn't interacted a lot recently, but so much respect for family blown up, reputation destroyed. And it hurts so much because I know 100 stories like that. They fall like rain. And it doesn't have to be. I thank you for your kind attention. There's another story about women in the first part of Proverbs. Two women that are competing for our attention. One is Lady Wisdom. And the other is Lady Folly. That dominates Proverbs 9. Some would lump that into this category even. There are so many similarities. God is appealing to us, and the world is appealing to us. And there's a choice that's got to be made. What is your choice going to be? Are you going to seek God or are you going to seek the world? If you're going to seek God, there's only one way to do that, and that's through Jesus Christ. If you need to obey the gospel this morning, we would encourage you to do that. Don't wait. Don't let more and more consequences accumulate. Don't allow time for your heart to harden. Don't spend another moment entangled in sin. Run. Run.